Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 878. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about lakes and berries, waterfalls and a sternwheeler, a cave, and dugobores as we drive the Selkirk Loop in northwestern the U.S. and southwestern Canada. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about the Selkirk Loop.
I'd like to welcome to the show Anthony and Jody St. Clair from learnersandmakers.com, who come to talk to us about a road trip, the Selkirk Loop. Anthony and Jody, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's so great to be here, Chris, and to share one of the coolest road trips we have taken as a family.
Well, let's put it on a map, because I don't think a lot of people are going to recognize the name.
Exactly. So the International Selkirk Loop is two countries in three states. It is parts of northern Idaho, southern British Columbia and Canada, and northeastern Washington state.
Excellent. And why should someone drive the Selkirk Loop?
It is just the most epic, gorgeous views of nature, I think. And it's very accessible. I'm an amputee, and so I'm always looking for ways to easily access nature. It felt like we were out in the middle of these beautiful spaces while I didn't have to do a 10-mile hike to do it. And the
some of us
road
with
trip was really gorgeous.
Some of us with not that good excuses don't like doing the 10-mile hike either, so that's good.
It's just, we couldn't believe how gorgeous it was and that we feel like it's relatively known. We've done a lot of the big kind of road trips before.
Sure.
Yeah, we've driven things like the Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia, yep. North Carolina. We've driven Highway 1 in California. We've RV'd across the entire USA. The Selkirk Loop holds its own with any of those scenic drives.
I believe you. That's my pull quote for the episode. Excellent. So let's talk about the itinerary. Where are we going to start?
Oh, typically, the way most people come at this is you start from Spokane, Washington. It's right off I-90, so Interstate 90 in the U.S., so it's drivable. It also has an international airport. So from Spokane, you're about 50 miles from the starting point, which is in Newport, Washington. So that's about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half drive from Spokane to Newport. And then typically what most people do is they do a counterclockwise loop. So you go up into northern Idaho to Sandpoint or Lake Pend'Oreille. You go into British Columbia and loop around the Selkirk Mountains. So that is the centerpiece of this. Throughout all of this drive, you're going through different mountains that are older than the Rockies. And you don't have, say, dramatic 14ers or something like that necessarily, but you have just these incredibly gray, looming mountains, conifer forests, and just pristine waters that you're wrapping around in BC back down toward Washington State.
I think what made it different than when we've spent time in the Rockies before is that you just have these incredibly gorgeous lakes as well. Anthony mentioned Lake Pend'Oreille, which is huge, and there's so many different things that you can do in order to enjoy that lake. But then we also took a ferry. What lake was that?
That was Kootenai.
Yes, and it's a very long, skinny lake. We put our RV on this ferry. I wasn't even sure like how that would work, but it goes across the lake for part of the loop. And that ferry ride alone was just so beautiful. with this lake and the mountains around. And again, you don't have to necessarily do this huge hike to get this beautiful mountain lake.
Got one it. Of the okay, so, things that really stood out to us was, on the one hand, this is a 280-mile loop from kind of point to point. So starting at Newport, going all the way around and back. At the same time, if you say went from the corner to corner, you have what they call super side trips. There are six other kind of loops. Imagine like a little bubble sticking on a bubble that you can mm-hmm. also take off the main. If you go from the northernmost point on this to the southernmost point, which encompasses some of those super side trips, it's actually only about 186 miles, which is similar to the distance between, say, San Diego and Santa Barbara, California, or if you're on the East Coast, like Boston to New York City. So as that crow flies, it's not actually all that far. But at the same time, within that span, you are in this ostensibly more remote part of the United States and Canada, but your typical driving day is just a couple of hours. So you're never all that far from various small towns and other communities as well. So you're remote, but then you have plenty of town amenities and more urban amenities all along the way.
Excellent. I want to get into some specifics. So you started us in Spokane. Is there anything we want to do in Spokane before we say goodbye to Spokane and the airport?
Unfortunately, didn't get the opportunity to explore Spokane very much when we were going through it. And okay. It isn't technically part of the loop,
right?
If that makes sense. But it is the most accessible urban area for that. Coming from the Canadian side, it's Calgary.
Calgary.
But sure. That is a little further away from the loop than Spokane is. I feel like Spokane would have some really interesting things because, in general, we love Washington State. We've found amazing things all over, but we did not get the opportunity to explore Spokane enough to really say, do okay. this before
so you
go.
So you started us in Newport.
Mm-hmm. So Newport is a small town. As you approach the beginning of the Selkirk Loop, there'll be these signs kind of throughout the loop that remind you, hey, you're on the Selkirk Loop, or you're about to join, or hey, there's a super side trip this way or that way coming up. So when you get into Newport, it's actually a great spot if you want to just take a little bit, stretch your legs. There's a little visitor center. There's a museum. There's also this giant paddle wheel just as you're coming into town. And it's this great reminder that big tech used to be huge machinery.
Sure.
So that is a great spot to stop, have a bit of lunch. There's a little grocery and like ice cream place nearby. And little things like that. Just a bit of Americana, small town.
When you say a giant pedal wheel, are we talking about a mill?
We're talking about like an old mill wheel. The sort of thing that you might have
got
used at a lumber mill or a timber mill back in the day when timber would have been a primary industry up in this part of the country.
Okay. Cool. And then you said a museum there. Is that a local history museum or what kind of museum?
It's essentially like a kind of county museum. There's a lot of things about the timber industry there, the overall history of the region.
Got it. Okay.
So after Newport, which would really just be maybe a small stop, the star of staying would be Sandpoint, Idaho. And that's on Lake Ponderay, and there is a lot to do there. We could have kayaked. We got a storm while we were there. Unfortunately, we didn't get to, but we did get to do a tour of sightseeing and history of Lake Ponderay and the area. There's different boats and stuff that go across the lake. You could rent a boat and do something on the lake there. The lake is really the star in this area, and we stayed a couple of nights there. So total, our full loop was about 7 days. If we were going to go back, we probably would do maybe more like 10 nights
at
instead, least. 10 to 14. But it was totally doable and didn't feel rushed because we don't like feeling rushed. We're more of the slow travel type. So we didn't feel rushed in the 7 nights.
Okay. And Lake Ponderay, so we talked about kayaking. What else are we doing on Lake Ponderay or in the vicinity?
There are various public beach areas. So if you just want to go and essentially be kind of by the lake, bring a picnic, etc. There are towns all along there, too, where you can stop and dine. like Jody was saying, a lot of the attraction is just getting on the water. There are boat tours you can take. We took one that focused on the history of the region and of the lake. Lake Pend'Oreille is so big and so deep, the Navy actually used to do submarine exercises in the water.
I saw that.
Yeah. So we also went up the mountain, though, to Schweitzer, which is a ski area. So if you were there in the winter and you wanted to ski, it's a really wonderful ski area. We were there in the summer. So we actually went up there, and they have summer activities as well. And the kids enjoyed zip lining. We went up the ski lift in the summer and just saw the beautiful views. One of our kids loved doing the bungee jumping, like not off a bridge or something, but just on a trampoline. That was a great spot for us as a family up in the ski area.
You mentioned your family and your kids a couple times. You're doing this in an RV with family. You didn't mention how many kids you have or what ages they are.
Yeah, we have two kids, and they are, well, when we did this trip, they were 11 and 8. One of them is now 9. They just keep growing. That's one of those things. And we travel full time with them. So part of the time we travel internationally, and part of the time we road trip around the U.S. in our RV. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
So from Lake Pend'Oreille, you head north toward the Bonners Ferry area. There are some national wildlife refuges along the way that can make good stops. Mainly, you're going to be crossing the land border into Canada. And one thing to note about the Selkirk Loop is it is two countries, the USA and Canada. So you do need a passport. If for some reason you did not want to cross borders, the loop is so big and there are so many different side trips that you could, say, have a US-only itinerary or a Canada-only itinerary. And there's a lot of resources online that we can cover later that will help you plan that out the way you want. But essentially, you'll cross by land here. Typically, that doesn't take very long. I think it took us maybe 5 or 10 minutes. Once you get across the border, you're heading toward Creston, British Columbia.
Okay.
Yeah, so in Creston, we got the opportunity actually to tour an organic dairy farm and, of course, sample some cheese and some cheese curds and some ice cream and all of those goodies. And it was a great stop because we picked up some of those just to enjoy as we continued along our way as well.
And is that an organic dairy farm that other people can tour? And what's the name of it?
Yes, you are available to go there and visit. It's woman-owned and also is a wonderful example of the meshing of organic practices with technology. It was pretty amazing the things we got to observe about how the cows are milked, for example. It's all done by robotics. But when the cows go in for milking, not only are they getting milked, but this device is essentially taking 105 different data points. So if something is up with that animal, the farmers are going to know right away. So instead of them trying to milk the cow, say, is Bessie's head feeling warm? They're going to know all of this in a much more cohesive way that then helps them take better care of their animals. It was a fascinating operation to see.
I'm
guessing this is Kootenai Meadows Farm?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that over and over that we just really loved with everybody that we met along the way, different crafts people, the farmers, they all were very passionate about what they did, which made it really fun to get a chance to see what they do and see where they live. And that's always one of those things that's just great to meet people who are passionate about what they're doing. So we especially liked that when we were in visiting the farm. They were obviously very passionate about what they were doing there, which is cool.
All right. Where to next?
I'm going to take a moment to talk about Kootenai. We heard all of them. Seemed to vary some on the U.S. side versus the Canadian side or region to region. So we're probably going to use all of those pronunciations and somebody somewhere consider each one right or wrong. From there, we went to the Kootenai Columbia Discovery Center. This is a nature exploration area, nature education. Great little facility that has a hands-on museum, where the kids or you can handle different animal pelts. You can learn about the flora and fauna of the area. Our main activity was, in addition to going on boardwalk hikes along the wetlands, you can take guided canoe tours through the water. So you can learn about the ecology, learn about the plants and animals that live there, and just from the water experience this area around you. It's very quiet. It's one of those places where you mostly have the sound of the paddle on the water. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the mountains. If you're there at the right time of year, our guides actually encouraged our children to sample cattails, which are basically an edible snack. You can peel the layers from the bottom of the cattail and have a little crunch on it. It tastes a little like
celery,
cabbage, cucumber, jicama, mix of those flavors. But it's quite tasty.
And it's the root of the cattail, as I recall, below the water?
Right at the bottom.
Yeah.
They have to be young. And before they've put out their little cattail blooms and all of that. But it's one of those hands-on experiences that really gives such a great memory of this trip. And our kids, certainly, that's one of the things that they remember.
I was just trying to channel, I think, my favorite book when I was the age of your kids, which was My Side of the Mountain, where he was living up in the forests in the Catskills and was eating cattails at one point in the book. So I had to reach back here a little bit. It's been a while since I've been your kids' ages.
Just a few years.
Yeah, one or two. Where to next?
So part of what we enjoy about this area is there is a range of accommodation pretty much everywhere you go. We were RVing, so we typically stayed in campgrounds, stayed at provincial parks, RV parks, all of those sorts of areas. But throughout these communities, you're also going to find Airbnbs, hotels, things like that. From Creston, we continued north to the Kootenai Bay, which is where we caught this free ferry that Jody mentioned earlier. So it's a free ferry across the water. Crossing's about 30 minutes, but before getting there's an area called Crawford Bay, just a little before the ferry. And it's known for having all of these artisan workshops. And these folks were just amazing.
Yeah, we went to a broom making. There was different enameling, weaving, different jewelry making, blacksmith, and for the kids to see, some of them are like doing their crafts as you're going in, the weaving. They had a couple of looms set up and they're weaving away at their wares. It was really lovely. Well, to meet, it's always lovely to meet the artists when you're thinking about maybe getting a gift or a souvenir, and they're really beautiful things. It was a really cute area. It was really fun.
Once you take the ferry across, this is where you start getting into some of your options for the trip. Your basic loop of the International Selkirk Loop is you cross the ferry and you keep going west. However, we went up north a little more on one of the super side trips, the Kootenai Lake Scenic Shoreline Drive. Taking this, you go north a little more where you cross. It's about half an hour drive to the town of Caslow. I think for all of us felt very special. It brought together this mix of history and nature and small town. I think for me at least became the epitome of why we months later still think back to this trip so much and so fondly.
I feel like the one place that we left that we were kind of like, we really wish we could have had more time in this, was Caslow. And I think maybe because the ferry did take a little bit longer and that part of the drive was a little bit longer, and we got in a little bit later, we only had one night there. But we would have liked to have done some kayaking on the lake there and just enjoyed the scenery more there. It's really beautiful. That would be the area that if we had gotten two or maybe even three nights in Caslow, I think that's where we would have changed our trip a little bit.
Part of what makes Caslow so special, one, you have a wonderful small town. So it's easy to walk around. There's lots of cafes, little shops. There was a brewery. You have an RV park and campground just right off the edge of town, which if you are camping, RVing, is wonderful because you're not out in the middle of somewhere or far out of town. Mm-hmm. You're right there, which is really nice when you're RVing to just be able to walk to dinner or walk to get a beverage.
Yeah.
You're also right on the shore of the lake. So in addition to having the mountains there, there's a little stone kind of pebble beach where people are launching kayaks. You can charter fishing boats. One of the mainstays of Kaslo is the SS Moyi. Mm-hmm. Before there were roads through the region, the main people got around was by boat. So you had paddle wheel steamer ferries like the Moye that would go up and down the lake, all through the different water channels there, helping people and goods get where they needed to go. The Moye was in service for, I think it was around 60 years. It was retired from service in the 1950s. My dad was a toddler when this thing was taken out of service. And it's been restored. Most of these have been junked. They're not in existence in any form at all anymore. But this one was restored, and it's now a museum. So you can walk through this. You can go from the cargo hold up to the captain's wheelhouse at the top. You can see everything from, here's an example of a Model T that was being transferred to its buyer. You can see where the ladies would have had their children in their separate social area, and where the men would have been in their own separate social area. And if the conditions are right, and as long as you're being courteous, the children are encouraged to sound the foghorn.
I don't know if you said that this is a sternwheeler or not.
Yes, sternwheeler.
But no longer actually in the water.
It's kind of like just outside of the water. Almost looks like it's in the water.
But right, but you're not right. You're not going to take a cruise with it anymore.
No, definitely not. No, it's kind of kept out of the water, I think, probably to ease preservation, I would imagine. So after Kaslo, we went back down south toward Balfour, which is where the ferry had come over. Mm-hmm. And then you can continue west on the highway there. There are a couple of communities. Nelson is one that I think if we were doing the Selkirk Loop again, we would want to stop in.
That was one that we drove through and we're like, we should have stopped here. There's always things you learn that you're like, next time. And that was definitely one. It was a really cute looking community that had a lot kind of going on in its downtown. And we felt like we could have done a stop there.
Yeah. We instead continued a little more west along the river there toward the town of Castlegar. Castlegar is known for a few things. There is an island in the rivers in town that you can walk to called Zuckerberg Island. Whether or not it's connected to a certain social media mogul, I don't know. But Zuckerberg Island itself is reachable either by a hiking trail causeway that goes right across the river, or there's a pedestrian suspension bridge. And when you get to the island, it's covered in hiking trails and just other little forested areas where you're wandering through the woods, rivers nearby. But you're also right there in town. So it's a nice way to be in town, but get a good dose of nature.
One of our secrets of family travel is that we are always looking for good gardens, good parks, just outdoor areas where we can get a feel for that place. But at the same time, get maybe a little bit of energy out. As we're traveling and we're looking at these gardens or green spaces inside cities and stuff, it gives us just a chance to be like, wow, this is different than where we live, and this is the same, or whatever. And it's a nice sense of the place while also being able to get a little energy out.
I was reading that in Zuckerberg Island, there is a reconstructed indigenous pit home or a kakuli. Did you get a chance to?
We didn't get a chance to get over to that, unfortunately. Yeah, we just did a little bit around the bridge area where we got onto the island. So there were quite a few other areas of the island that we did not get to. But it was actually pretty surprising that, yes, you have some trails and you have these other features from indigenous culture. I believe there was also a site that had to do, I forget if it was a local timber baron or something like that. I think some sort of house reconstruction. Mm-hmm. But again, that's on a little different part of the island. We didn't get that far into it.
Okay.
Something else that was great about helping the kids get some energy out, but also have a little culture, is we love experiencing outdoor art. Castle Gar itself has a kind of rotating sculpture garden right in the middle of downtown, so around City Hall and all this area. You have sculptures just throughout. Some of them rotate. I think some are there on a more permanent basis. But for, especially for parents, when you want to expose your kids to more art, but you don't necessarily want to drag them around a museum, we find anything involving an outdoor space and sculpture to be a really good middle ground. It leads to fun discussions. The kids are looking at things in different ways. They're asking questions, but they also can still be outside. They don't have to worry about being museum quiet. So we find that a really engaging way to dig into a little culture, and also you're roaming around town, which is also fun. So you're just taking in what's around and seeing who's out and about.
And this reminds me, I didn't mention it, when you were in Caslo, did you get to the hide and seek with the coots? There is outdoor art along the Caslo River Trail that is installed that are little tiny stone features that are playing hide and seek. So a perfect thing for going there with the kids.
It is indeed. That actually, you also get to that from a really wonderful red covered bridge over the river. Unfortunately, when we got there, about 5 minutes later, a huge thunderstorm came in that sent us scurrying back indoors. So sadly, we didn't get to do that walk. So that is one of those things that if we make our way back up there again, I think would be top of the list. We'd heard from very good authority folks who really love that particular trail for that reason, is that the sculpture and art is supposed to be really fun for kids.
Excellent.
Another aspect of Castle Gar that we had come for is what's called the Dukhobors. This is a group of Russian immigrants who came over to Canada throughout the latter 1800s. They were part of a pacifist Christian sect, and they faced various persecution at home and found better lives in Canada. So there is a essentially kind of living history center that has reproductions of traditional buildings. They're giant bread ovens and kitchen areas.
Yeah, we got to try their borscht, which was really different than what you'd think of, because it didn't have any beets in it at all, and cheese and bread. And it was a nice way to see just this little slice of this community. They're still descendants from these people, but that they lived self-sustainably on these farms and stuff in this land for a long time.
Yeah, they were very much a just workaday farming, community-oriented group of people. But some of the details of them were really fascinating. Their bread ovens could hold 75 different loaves. So they did not mess around when it came to their baking. There is also a large element in the culture of carving wood, especially into implements. They had these ornamental ladles that were just giant.
But it was like very modest.
Everything was very modest. Yes.
This ladle was giant, but it was, you know, very simple. After that, we crossed back into the U.S.
Crossing into northeastern Washington, I think felt like the most remote part of the trip. At the same time, you get just a few miles into Washington. We stopped at a little place called Vista House. It's a newly opened, enclosed structure where you can look out over the cliffs there to see the Boundary Waters Dam.
Okay.
Now, you're not only seeing this kind of curved, very distinctive looking dam, but you also see where these hydroelectric power lines come out of the rock, go up the cliff, and essentially start their journey carrying power to wherever it's being taken to. It was quite an impressive sight.
It's a beautiful view.
From there, you drive down some and essentially around part of the lake to get to this Boundary Lake area. There are various recreational areas there, including some boat put-ins. So we got out our kayaks, and there is a waterfall there called Peewee Falls, and you can only reach via boat.
Yeah, so you're really close to the boundary there, and you turn right in your kayak so that you don't cross over back into Canada. And then you go, and this falls is called Peewee Falls, but it is not small at all.
It's 233 feet.
Yeah, all amongst this basalt, very Pacific Northwest waterfall. And I had no idea that I wanted to swim around a waterfall until I did this, but it was one of these things that you realize it's on your bucket list as you're doing it kind of thing. And it was very cold because the water is cold, but it was so amazing to do. It was so great. Luckily, we could get to a nice sunny spot fairly quickly after that, and the kids had a rope swing to swing off of and jump and everything. Everybody's just out enjoying a nice summer day, but it's not overly crowded or anything. It's a really special spot. I have to say, I think that was one of my most memorable and favorite things, was kayaking to the falls.
I'm going to guess that there was no part of this trip that was overly crowded. Am I on the right track?
You are very much on the right track. That was one of the nice balance points for us about this, is if you've been on the Blue Ridge Parkway, there are times it can get kind of crowded. Mm-hmm. On the other extreme, Highway 1 in California, incredibly beautiful, incredibly remote. The Selkirk Loop is in this region of the U.S. and Canada where you just simply are not going to get as many people. So on the one hand, you have that remoteness, you have that wilderness feel, you have this proximity to some amazing nature.
But a lot of amazing communities as you're going through. You're never very far from another community for whatever things you want to do or resources that you need or whatever it is. So
we were there in late June, so you're getting more into kind of your prime summer travel, but at no point did anything feel like it was particularly crowded. Probably when we were kayaking at Peewee, that was part of the Boundary Reservoir Recreation Area. So you've got a day use area, there's a campground. The campground, I think, was full. And that, I think, was the only kind of full facility we encountered.
Okay.
We were getting close to 4th of July weekend, though, too. So that's probably as full as it's going to get.
Yeah. So from there, you get into some little communities. There's Ione and Medellin Falls. Part of the things we enjoyed about these areas, one, you can go to a place called Gardner Cave, which is the longest known cave in Washington State. So you can go on guided tours. You can only access the cave on a guided tour. They also offer a tour usually at noon that is focused on families. Tour lasts about an hour. It's about 39 degrees in there, so you definitely want a jacket.
Yeah. Which is nice to cool off a little, maybe if it's warm. But caves are a real iffy thing for me. Sometimes it just depends on the tour. Mm-hmm. This one was not like, you have 1,000 steps, you have to go down and then back up. It was very reasonable for somebody who's not going to be able to handle a lot of steps. There are steps, but I had no problem with them. So it was definitely something you could, our kids are a little bit bigger. They can handle a lot. They can handle more steps than I can. But if you had little kids, it would be doable as well.
Definitely. We definitely saw kids of pretty much all ages on the tour we were on. We saw some smaller kids.
We saw some teenagers.
Saw some teens,
Yeah, it was a nice introduction to several cave formations and not for super long tour or anything. It was just a nice way to, especially if doing any kind of caves is a new thing, this would be a great one to start with.
Excellent. Yeah, I loved caves at that age, especially. I remember doing them in road trips in the Pacific Northwest with my family when I was 9 or 11.
Yeah, it's over the last few years, about that age, have started doing some more of them. They're always a highlight. We've gotten to do some pretty epic ones now that are not the hiking ones necessarily. I think we've gotten a little bit spoiled. The kids are ready to go spelunking. That will be without me. They just have to go. They have to get old enough that they can do it. But it's really fun to see which one take hold into and which ones are like, oh, that was fun, but meh. And meanwhile, we might be like, that was the best thing ever. But why this loop worked so well for us is because everybody had something that they really loved. from it.
Excellent.
Part of what's really nice about the northeastern Washington part of the Selkirk Loop is when you start in northern Idaho, when you're coming through BC, you have these incredible experiences. This massive lake in Idaho, this ferry crossing, the sternwheeler steamer. You have these things that really stick in you and are exciting and have an epic feel. Coming into northeastern Washington, you need a little space in your soul and in your brain to kind of process that, but still have some good times. So I remember feeling like we come to Pee Wee Falls and we're like, oh, we kayaked to a waterfall. This is incredible. And then after that, we got to go to this cave, but not too strenuous, not too long, but a really cool, notable experience. At the same time in this area, there is a little waterfall hike called Sweet Creek Falls that's only about a quarter mile to take you to a short, wonderful waterfall with kind of a little wading pool area. And the sheer surprise of getting here and pretty much starting the trail and going, oh, I hear a waterfall. We were there before we knew it. And it was a lovely walk. The trail is actually very broad, very flat. Only pretty much once you get to the banks of the creek does it kind of get a little tricky.
It gets really rocky to get in close. So you lose the trail and you're walking over rocks. But pretty much any time we can have a spot to throw rocks into a creek, is, again, that's a default. You can imagine that, you know, since we travel full time, we don't have a ton of toys and such. You just can't when you're traveling all the time. But
as long as you can find rocks and sticks,
a creek are just a mainstay. It doesn't seem to matter. We have definitely have not grown out of that stage yet, but it's,
I haven't staged
either. I kind of hope we never do.
I don't know that I've grown out of that either. So,
and then logistically, it was also nice though, because for you, we could go on a trail that was short. It was only about a quarter mile. It was relatively level. It was broad. And it was not a very strenuous hike to get there, which was also very nice.
It was really nice.
Because we've gone on other waterfall hikes, which, yes, hike down into this canyon, go this long way.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a lot more strenuous.
Especially to the cave, this waterfall. There's several things, but they're not, none of them are too hard, so you can get a few things in.
Yeah, it was nice on this leg of the trip to have some essentially kind of simpler pleasures that were still very accessible. And then you're still taking in this incredible natural space. As you also know, oh, we're coming to the end of this drive.
Well, that's what I was going to say is I feel like you're wrapping up this itinerary. What else do we need to cover before we get there?
If you're looking into how you want to go, like we said, we did this trip in an RV. However, plenty of people drive it in car. We saw plenty of people on motorcycles. There are also people who will use it as a cycling touring destination. So all of those facets of doing a good road trip are there.
Let's get into the beauty of the area, because you've talked about it a couple times, but we haven't really nailed down. You know that my usual question is, you're standing in the prettiest spot. Where are you standing? What are you looking at? But let's expand that a few times here and say, if you had to say the three prettiest spots on this loop, because we're traveling here for the beauty largely, where am I?
Pee Wee Falls is there for me. Swimming in the falls, kayaking to the falls, even just the area you're kayaking in there.
The Boundary Waters was beautiful. And also when you realize this is part of the Panderay River, so it's still a lot of the same water. It's just wider in this area.
So you've got the big mountainous region all around you. You've got this basalt that's part of the Pacific Northwest and all the volcanic activity there.
Okay.
It's very green and lush, and it's really forested, and water speaks to me. That's just one of those things. It put me near a beach or a lake or a river or whatever, and I'm happy. So if you're one of those people who love being around water, this is definitely
Of our picks will involve water and each place. So you have Pee Wee from Washington State. Lake Panderay in Idaho, I think, would be another one. The lake nestled in these mountains, the water is so incredibly blue. It's not the same blue as, say, Crater Lake in Oregon, which is a very iconic blue that people always ask, how is that possibly real? But the breadth of the lake in the mountains there, and then you think about just how far north in the U.S. you are. When you look at Idaho on a map and there's that skinny panhandle sticking up, you are just a little bit removed from the U.S.-Canada border. And all that really, I think, came home as we were gazing out at the lake. And then the third one would be in British Columbia at Caslow. And it would be standing on that rocky beach. To your left is town. You have downtown. You can just see the Moye probably out of the corner of your eye. And before you, the lake is just spreading out. And it's sloping up with the trees on the hills, this kind of deep gray rock. And when you learn about some of the geology, some of this rock is some of the oldest exposed mountain on the planet. So looking out at that, you have this confluence of the water of the lake. Someone's probably coming up in their kayak, and somebody else is probably pushing out their kayak. You have the trees and the hills, but then also these elements of history and culture with the town and the paddle steamer.
One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in the Selkirk Loop.
Oh, would it be when I went up to the waterfall and you wondered if a rock was going to fall on my head?
No, I didn't wonder that, but I wondered if you were going to get a concussion from the water itself dropping so many feet. I swam around the waterfall, but he was brave enough to go directly under.
As we go to wrap this up, if you had to summarize the Selkirk Loop in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
I think scenic,
natural,
and pristine.
Excellent. Our guests again have been Anthony and Jody St. Clair from learnersandmakers.com. So first of all, learners and makers. Why are we learners and makers?
We really believe in the learning experience through travel, that feeling of learning something new, whether it be new food or a new culture, expanding your worldview. And we believe in making our own destiny. We believe in making our lives the way we want them to be.
And then also showing our children how to learn to make their destinies.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if we wanted to send people to the best post on learnersandmakers.com about the Selkirk Loop, where are we going to send them?
So you go to learnersandmakers.com and search for either Selkirk, or you can search for Epic Family Road Trip. Either way, you'll turn up our main post about our experience, along with a few companion pieces that are about the trip.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to that main piece in the show notes of this episode so people can more easily find it. Anthony and Jody, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for a good road trip and for the Selkirk Loop.
So great talking with you, Chris. Thank you for having us.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, and especially the latest patron, who is Ellen Merriweather. Thanks, Ellen, and thanks to the rest of you who've been supporting Amateur Traveler. If you're interested in learning more, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I forgot to say this last week. Last week was my birthday, and I'd like to just thank all the rest of you also for being a present to me. I really do enjoy doing this podcast. It's a lot of work, but I enjoy doing it year after year after year, apparently 18 plus years. And thank you all for listening. When I say that at the end of the show, I really mean that. It would not be as much fun if you weren't on the other end of this microphone. So Thanks so much for listening. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.